Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Hope everybody's having a good start to the week so far. It's Monday at 6 o'clock here on the East Coast in New York. Very excited to have back on the show tonight Samantha Inesta of BeASisterToASister.org, a really cool organization, certainly trying to do better by people, I would say. I think, we've had many episodes here. This is part 10 of this series that we're doing with Samantha, and it'll be extending out pretty much, I think, until the middle of January at this point. Right, Sam?
I think so, yeah.
Great. Well, let me formally re-welcome Samantha back onto the show. It's been a crazy day for one guy here, but you know what? I'm glad that we made it, and BeASisterToASister.org is the website. So with that being said, Sam, tell us about BeASisterToASister, why you started it, and what you're trying to do.
Sure. So I started BeASisterToASister because I noticed that there was a strong need for aftercare for survivors of human trafficking, that a lot of the programs that were set up to help them initially had very stringent cutoff deadlines, and that survivors were just not benefiting from that. So I decided to start BeASisterToASister as an aftercare program to provide, you know, extra counseling, medical services, legal help. I put together survivor networks. We have focus groups. We also have shepherding programs where we provide accompaniment to survivors to things like doctor's appointments or even day-to-day activities. And so to just have a place and a person for a survivor to reach out to in their time of need and in their time of crisis without any sort of limitations on the care that they're getting.
And how long did it take you to actually set up this organization? I mean, to really get the pieces into place to make a difference?
Well, I'm still putting some pieces together, but I would say that for where I am right now, I would say about 4 years.
Wow, 4 years. And who do you primarily work with? I mean, I know that you definitely have other people that help you out
right,
you know, for the organization itself, but I know, you know, you have a pretty extensive network of people that you work with.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have a partner organization who is led by a survivor. It's an Indonesian organization. I also I'm going to be working with, starting next year, with an organization in Cairo, Egypt, and I have some networks here that I work with, the New York State Anti-Trafficking Coalition. I work with the Brooklyn DA's Human Trafficking Task Force, and those are primarily my networks that I do work with. Also with law enforcement, that's just, you know, you can consider that a network. So,
sure. No. Well,
I
think that's probably with what we've spoken about. I mean, over the first 9 episodes now, we've pretty much covered that you and your organization really need to be working hand-in-hand with law enforcement.
Right, correct.
Yeah. Now, not to put anybody on the spot, and I don't want to put you in a weird place with this question, and if you don't want to answer it, just don't. I'm setting it up for a really harsh question when it probably isn't, but have you ever hit a scenario where you kind of were at odds with the local law enforcement about the handling of a particular situation?
I'm at odds with a lot of their procedures, but I have never actually come head to head with law enforcement personally.
Right.
But there are some things that I really don't want to get in depth right now that I really don't agree with and that absolutely need to change.
Sure, absolutely. I think that's a great answer for it. I mean, it's not like we don't know. And everyone that's been listening to this, your series here, I think it's pretty obvious that there is a need for change from top to bottom, really. I mean, at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, Sam, we spoke a lot about aftercare. That's a big thing that you provide. I mean, it's necessary And, you know, mm-hmm. I know that, you know, just by speaking with you, that every scenario is different and everybody kind of helps or gets to the next phase of, I guess, closure, could you say, when they're coming face to, well, really getting out of trafficking.
Right.
But,
I would say, yeah, the next phase of healing would be the better
thing. Sure. Now, how does your approach to each different scenario, because, you know, I'm sure there's so many different types of trauma that these women go through.
Right.
How does your approach mm-hmm. with them vary? How do you kind of look at a situation and say, okay, this girl I need to be more, you know, hands-on with. This one, she's, you know, you can tell she's very introverted because of all the things that she's seen
mm-hmm.
or done. How does your approach change?
Right. Well, I do work with different types of girls, and there are some girls who have been incarcerated, some girls who have been through the foster care system.
Sure.
And some of them harbor and they hold on to a lot of anger, which is understandably so. But these are also girls that never really experienced real love from anyone. And so with those girls, what I try to do is I just try to show them love, and I try to give them a lot of patience, because these girls need a lot of patience. And I also combine that with counseling, because, I mean, it's the love and the patience is great, but these girls, they're still working through a lot of issues and they have to let that anger go. So that's why we need to have counseling to combine it with what we're doing, so this way we can get the best outcome for her. And then there are survivors that will come from other countries, that come from totally different cultures, and these girls are very demure, they're very quiet, they're very sweet, you know, and you think in your head, like, how could this happen? Because they're very, very different from domestic survivors in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But those girls are willing to learn. Those girls are willing to do whatever they can to move forward in their situation. So they're actually a little bit easier, depending on the country and the culture that they come from. So those girls will basically tell you straight out what they need, what they want, what they would like, and it just makes it a lot easier. And a lot of times when those girls come to me, they've already gotten counseling.
Right.
And the good thing about that is that you can see that they've kind of moved forward. They want to go on to the next phase. Like getting a job, learning a skill, you know, getting housing and all of that. And they're willing to work with you 100%.
Now, how hard is that, though? Is it hard for them to get, you know, like a normal job after something like this?
Well, again, it takes a lot of time of counseling, a lot of, you know, sort of going through different situations, a lot of people just, you know, around them and just trying to help them. It's really not that easy.
Right.
They really have to be mentally ready before they can move on to get a job. And so usually during that time, they'll be staying in a shelter. And while they're in a shelter, they'll be going to counseling. And the counselor will, you know, will talk to them, and the counselor will make sure that they are ready to go out into the working world to handle a job, because that's something that they're definitely going to need when they go back out into the world.
Right.
They're going to need a job in order to pay their rent, and, you know, and yes, I mean, a lot of times they do want to go back to school, but a lot of survivors also need to work while they're going to school, so they have to be mentally ready for that. So in some cases, they might be mentally ready to go to work, but they may not be mentally ready to go to school just yet, so that's going to take a little time. So every survivor is different on, you know, on how much they can handle and what they're ready to do at the moment.
Sure. Absolutely. And, I mean, have you ever, I might have hit this with you before, but have you ever mm-hmm. reached a point with someone where you thought, wow, there's nothing that I can really do? I mean, I'm trying, you know, or are you more a realist and it's like, you know what, I just got to keep going?
Well, I never give up. This is what I do. If I do have a girl, and I have seen one or two that are like that, I just simply say to them, listen, if you need anything, I'm here for you. I'm not going to walk away from you. I'm not going to shut the door on you. When you're ready to come to me, if you need anything, I'll be here for you. That's it.
Right.
I never just say, oh, they're just too much. I just want to let them go, and I never want to look at them again, you know? I never say that. I just say, look, when you're ready, I'm here. That's it. That's all I say to them. And I think that that's the best thing to do, because I know some people, you know, they want to just keep getting in their face and getting in their lives, and sometimes I think they're just exacerbating the situation. Give them some time to do whatever it is that they need to do, for better or for worse, and when they're ready, they'll come back to you. You know, that's all I can do. I mean, does it hurt to see them hurting like that? Of course it does, it would hurt me to let them go, but, you know, I just have to let them do what they need to do. You have to give them their space. When they're ready, they'll come back to you.
Sure. Now, Sam, I'm trying to picture the way that it works for you now, too. So let's say you have, you know, do people just approach you and say, this is what's happening, I need help? Or, you know, do you have the network that kind of says to you, okay, we have a girl in counseling right now for X amount of time, what can you do to kind of help her?
Yes, that's really what happens. It's the network.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And yes, that happens exactly how you say it. They say, yes, we have this girl. We want you to work with her. We like the way that you bring the girls together. We like the help that you give, because you just really help them on the level that they need. And so that's usually how I get them. A lot of these girls, you know, they come to me and they really need, like, basic necessities, like, you know, like, basic hygiene necessities, you know, and even just the ability to get a meal, to just get some food and clothes, you know. And so I'm able to provide that as best as I can. And, you know, with that, it's, you know, it's a lot of love, and it's a lot of, you know, companionship and being there for them and just helping them every step of the way.
And that's probably something that they're not, I mean, definitely not used to, you know, from what they've been through.
Exactly. You know, because sometimes, you know, a lot of the programs that they're put through initially, you know, they only focus on just basically getting them out. They focus on paperwork, and they just focus on just getting them to school or getting them housing or whatever, and they don't provide that other piece. They don't provide that, you know, I guess that extra understanding and that compassion, you know. There are some programs where, you know, girls are maxed out at a very young age, and a lot of them leave. They don't have a job. They're not going to school. And, you know, and they need that extra help, because that can only end up disastrously if they have nowhere to go. You know, as we've seen in recent years, that it could end up to be a very fatal decision. So that's why, you know, I do what I do, because and I just try to tell them, listen, if they have nowhere to go after this program, send them to me. I'd rather them come to me. We'll work it out, instead of them going back to the streets. And then who knows what could happen after that.
Right. And for everyone just joining us, I'm with Samantha Inesta of BeASisterToASister.org. Well, Be a Sister to a Sister. I always say that. The website is BeASisterToASister.org. It's contagious, you know. It works. It's very catchy.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, you know, truthfully, the name is very clever, because it's something that, you know, it just tells you right out, like, this is what you're all about. It's it's, you know, it's sisterhood. It's people looking out for one another. Which is very necessary, you know, today and
yes.
You know, in the future. It's just something that people can't forget.
That's
but
absolutely.
I want to shift gears a little bit now and focus on a topic that we discussed previously for today's show, off air.
A lot
of things have been going on over the last couple of years with bullying. And I'm not even saying in your department. I mean, bullying on a whole has really taken on a new level of insanity, you know, from the videos that these people, you know, these kids are posting videos of beating up classmates and everything. I mean, now, I can't even imagine that the type of teasing and, you know, ridicule, and I mean, I'm sure it gets way worse for survivors of human trafficking. So, you know, why don't you share with us a little bit about, you know, what you've kind of unfortunately grown accustomed to hearing.
Right, yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, like I've said in past shows, you know, the pimp culture and popular culture plays a huge part in the lives of a lot of young people. So a lot of these words that I'm going to say in a moment have and forgive me because they're horrible words, but they become commonplace. Yeah, they become commonplace in their vocabulary. And so it's almost as if they've made the pimp culture seem cool and okay, and it's okay to use those words against other girls.
Right.
I mean, those words are even used supposedly jokingly, but it's not a joke. So these are the same words that are used, you know, against girls who are survivors of sex trafficking, you know, whether the person knows it or not. So, you know, it's the usual words. It's hoe, it's slut, it's skank, it's tramp. And apparently there's a new word that came out of the pimp culture, and it's called thot. It's T-H-O-T. I'm not quite sure what it means, but I know it doesn't mean anything good. So I have no idea. The language has changed a lot since I was a teenager.
I've never heard that one. I've been out of school for a while now. So, yeah that's crazy.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm not going to date myself, but, you know.
Don't worry.
I mean, to be quite honest, it sounds a little bit like a word that we used to use. Instead of an H, it was a W. Maybe it's a play off of that word. I have no idea. It could be. I don't know. But these are the names that are being used against these girls, and they're being bullied in that way. And, you know, I think because of the mindset now, when young people find out that something like that has happened, you know, they think that she wanted to do this, and, you know, the same thing that a lot of people think, and so they lash out against them, and they call them those names, and it's really traumatizing for them, mostly because a lot of these girls suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. For a lot of the things, I mean, these girls are just, you know, had the most violent, horrible things happen to them. And I'm sure that while those things were happening to them, they were called those names as well. So to hear them from classmates is just as traumatizing as when it happened to them originally.
And now, I mean, with the way that the culture, that, you know, that culture does portray women, you know, sometimes in movies and music, obviously you don't think that helps any at all.
No, not at all. Especially for the African-American community, I think it's so much worse for them, and mostly for the women and girls. I know that there is racial inequality, you know, against black people, but there's also a gender inequality between black men and black women. So black women and girls, not only do they get objectified and used by the men in their culture, but then they also get it from society. So they are getting hurt the most. Not that I'm saying that what happens to black men is okay. I'm not saying that, but no one is looking at what's happening to the women and the girls. And even within the context of the families, because, you know, I work with girls where some of them actually, they come out of that life, and they go back to their parents' home. But their parents know what happened to them, and yet the parents will still blame them, and they will use those same names that their classmates use against them. There are some parents that will allow them to sleep at home, but they won't even feed them. And so the girls literally have to go to another organization like my own to get fed, because their parents won't feed them, because they have that mindset. And it's really bad for them, and it's very hard for them to really open up. It's hard for them to trust. And sometimes when these girls are hungry and they can't get food anywhere and their parents won't feed them, then they resort to stealing because they're hungry, you know, and that's really not something that we really want to see at all. Just to give you an overview, some of the girls that I work with are girls who are trafficked by gangs. And the words that I had just said before are actually the word bitches are put in there too. Those words are actually used as code words. So when cops are around, those words are used so that the cops wouldn't think that they were selling girls. But I'm thinking in my mind, but so it's okay for these girls to be called that out in the open. But, you know,
right.
obviously it's not okay for them to be sold. But, like, I mean, even still, those are not words that should be okay in society, whether they're in front of cops or anybody. Because then if those words are said like that and cops don't think anything of it, then cops are going to think that those words are true. They're going to think it's okay to use those words against these young black women when they see them for whatever reason. And we all know what's been happening lately in this country with cops and young black girls. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But, it's just not good. I mean, those are not good code words. They shouldn't be code words. I mean, the cops should not turn their head when they hear these women and girls being called those names. I mean, I don't think that that's something that, you know, that we should just dismiss. It's something that really seriously needs to be dealt with.
Right. No, I mean, and it's, you know, it's pretty clear, too. I mean, even with you just telling us this now, it seems like something so obvious. It's like, you know, how could people not get it? How do you not understand that? How do you not get that? First of all, the terms that you threw out there, you know, are all stuff that we've heard a million times, you know, and again, you know, you're watching television, you're watching, you know, music videos and all this stuff. And you can, you know, if I had a daughter, I would certainly take her out of the room or turn the television off and maybe try to explain to her, like you just explained, you know, just say that's not, those are not anything that you should ever be accepted to be called. But what do we do? I mean, what's really the solution with this?
Well, I mean, what I would say to young people in school is, like, instead of just looking at some of these girls and judging them, get to know her personally. Get to know who she really is. Don't look at the way she's dressed. Don't look at the way she acts. Because the problem is that, like, some of these girls, when they re-enter high school, you know, they don't really have a whole lot. So, you know, they may be dressing in clothes or whatever they have. It may not be the best, but they have something. Because all they want to do is just go to school, you know, whether it's, you know, old clothes or clothes that are maybe are not that appropriate for school, they just want to go to school, you know. So instead of just labeling them like that, get to know them, talk to them, you know, you might find that, you know, it's a totally different person than what you thought you were looking at. So, you know, my thing would be don't judge, because you never know what's happening in her life. You never know.
Oh, of course. And now with, I mean, you have this. So you're telling us about bullying and the what are the best ways to really, I mean, who should you reach out to first? I mean, if you hear a person that you're in school with being called these names, and you know something's kind of off with them, they just seem a little distant. They seem like they're very introverted. You know, what are some of the things that people can really do?
Well, I mean, me personally, I would tell them to leave her alone. But make sure you do it in an environment where there's a lot of people around, because you don't know the reaction of the person bullying or the people bullying, you know? So
And then
I would just basically just say, listen, you don't know her. Who are you to judge her? Who are you to turn around and say these things to her? You know, and then if it just escalates, obviously, you know, go to a teacher or some sort of school authority and just, you know, explain to them the situation. You know, and that's something that schools really need to get on board with, too, because, I mean, I just feel like there are some schools that are just letting a lot of bullying go, because you hear stories of young girls and guys, whatever, getting bullied in school, and nothing is done until there's a big social media campaign, until the press gets involved and the media is on it. Then something is done. Why does it have to take that long? Or a case where either the person being bullied is killed or they commit suicide. Schools should be proactive on all forms of bullying. Because if they don't, then it's just going to have disastrous consequences, and then bullying is going to go on because they're going to see, well, let's see how far I can get with it before they shut it down.
Right.
So schools really need to be very attentive to the situation.
No, Samantha, I think you really just hit the nail on the head with that, too. It's mm-hmm. being proactive and not kind of sitting back on it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. No, I agree. While we have a couple minutes left, there's one thing that I think is really pertinent into this entire conversation, and if we continue on with the next episode, that's fine. But mm-hmm. with terrorism, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've touched upon it in past episodes, but
right.
What I mean, and unfortunately, I got to say, you know, there's an entire culture of people that are labeled one thing because of mm-hmm. the action of a few, right?
Right.
And it's mm-hmm. scary. It's you know, it's scary, mm-hmm. and you know, it. No matter what you do, you always kind of have to keep an eye out. You always feel like, and it's mm-hmm. no way to enjoy life. But you
right.
know, the people that are forgotten, I think, are the women of, you know, certain cultures that, you know, they're ridiculed. I mean, even worse mm-hmm. than what we've described. But, you know, what have you seen as far as that goes? I mean, have you personally worked with people, you know, that might have been victims of that type of, you know, abuse?
Well, I mean, I know that there are some young girls that have been hurt by their churches, mm-hmm. You know, because of what's happened to them. So as far as, I mean that's as much as I can say. So do you mean like if, I mean, I'm just going to put out this, do you mean like if a girl is Muslim? Is she?
Well, definitely. Look, I'm not.
Okay.
I like to keep things very honest and open. I mean, people have their ideas right now. It's not, you know, I don't agree with it. I don't think that simply because of the way that you dress or the things that you believe in, you should be ridiculed like that.
Okay. Right,
or not
right.
trusted. But I think that is something that is definitely happening. I mean, there's
right.
just no way around it at this
right.
point.
Right. Right. Well, see, the unfortunate reality is that, you know, women are always demonized more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the recent case with the two Pakistani shooters in San Bernardino, California,
yep.
now they're
yep.
focusing on the wife. But if
right.
you listen to the language that they're using with the wife, I mean, I literally saw an article in the New York Post, and I have my own opinions about that newspaper that I'm going to keep to myself right now.
You don't have to hide your hatred for the New York Post.
Okay.
I myself am not a fan of the New
okay,
York Post.
Good. Okay. So they had a picture. I believe it may have been her or someone linked to this as a teenager. That, you know, they had a picture for that she was partying and all this, and they literally called her a skank. One of the words
right.
that I just used earlier, and that
right,
enraged
yeah.
me. You know nothing about her. You know nothing about her life, but yet you're so willing to put that label on her.
Right.
And of course, and now you even, and this is what gets me too, you even have other women in this country, and I'm just going to say it, other women of a more privileged background now,
mm-hmm.
you know, saying that she's the mastermind behind this, and you know, now they're putting her up at the top, you know,
right.
that she's more radicalized than he is and this, that. And they know nothing about the culture. They know nothing about Islam. They know nothing.
Right.
And they just want to attack. And, of course, that's wrong, and I don't believe it. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's no compassion. There's no nothing. I mean, I know people are angry. I know people are scared because of what's been happening and what happened in Paris and what happened
mm-hmm.
in San Bernardino. But this is not the answer. You know, and in
right.
my mind, if you demonize women in another culture, you're demonizing all women. Because
mm-hmm.
when one woman is demonized, every woman is generalized underneath that demonization, whether you want to be or not. And you can sit there and say, no, no, that's not me. Somebody's going to say, oh, what are you talking about? All women are like that.
Right.
But it's not the truth. You know, I
Absolutely.
Mean, not all women like to shop. Okay, you know, not all women like to get their nails done, but that's the kind
that's
of
true.
Generalization, a blanketed statement
sure.
that is going to fall on all of us.
That's
you know?
Very true.
And,
but Sam, Sam, unfortunately, I knew this was going to get you fired up, but we have to cut you off. We only have 10 seconds left, so I just want everyone to know to go to beasistertoassister.org. We're going to have you back on in 2 weeks, 2 weeks' time, so you know, we can continue with this conversation and some more stuff down the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
All right. Well, Sam, thanks for coming on the show tonight. And again, guys, check out beasistertoassister.org, and we will see you guys soon. So from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying take care.